Meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you, voicemail lady, if you don't mind the recording, folks. So we have Mark from Indiana and Jim from ECE, Doug and Mary from the Clearinghouse, Nathan from University of Phoenix, Julia from Acro, Diane from Northeastern, and Taki from Digitary. Did I miss anyone? Awesome. Welcome, folks. And if folks dial in, they can just join in. But to Julia and Doug, I think maybe a quick regroup on, you know, Doug and I were having an earlier conversation and maybe some discussion about, you know, what's coming up, especially with ACRO and PESC on the horizon, and maybe a discussion on, you know, what we hope to achieve and some timelines, Doug. Does that sound like a good way to start?
Yeah, I was just voicing my concern that at a pace of once a month, we probably have two more meetings before ACRO, and I know that we wanted to be able to report something, you know, meaty at ACRO, and I think we probably need to increase the cadence of these calls if we want to get some real work done. It's just my thought.
Agree.
Doug, you're probably right. I hate it when you're right, but you're probably right.
It happens once every blue moon. Hey Mark, did we give you any to-dos out of our end of our last call, or am I just dreaming of a different call I was on with you?
Well, no, I left the last call early, so if you gave them to me, you may have, but I didn't. I wasn't there to receive them.
Okay.
Well, this is Julia. One of the things we talked about was just having another conversation with Mark about the school's perspective. Mary had said she'd really like to hear that. I think that makes good sense. And Mark and I were just having a conversation about the school's perspective. So, Mark, why don't I let you kind of just tell what we talked about?
Okay, well, I think, and just to be sure, just to do the level set, which is, you know, what, you know, we at IU, what do we expect to convey to the clearinghouse in terms of the privacy status of our individual students. And my first take, since even though we've been dealing with it here at the institution for a while, we don't have very many, we don't have any changes to our systems yet. So first and foremost, it would need to be simple. Secondly, at least as initially thought, we would want to send a toggle switch, an on or an off switch, with each, you know, and actually, I don't know if it's with each send of information or if we simply, when we want to change the status, we include an attribute that indicates whether or not the privacy, the specific privacy regulation is valid for this individual student. I mean, it's really not at all that dissimilar from FERPA. So I don't know if I'm, and that was really going to be quite the end of it. In other words, when we submit, if we say I have this individual student, we consider them to be a GDPR data subject. We toggle the switch on, and thus we have an existing contract and set of expectations about how you're going to treat that individual subject to the GDPR data requirement. And if they go out of, in other words, if someone moves and they're no longer a GDPR data subject, we send you another value for that attribute, and it's turned off. I'm probably too simple, but I think if we start simply, we can evolve into things that require it.
Did we talk last time about some institutions may apply this flag by the individual and some may apply it by the individual record?
Or, yes, we did.
Well, by field?
We did
have that. I remember that a little bit.
Yeah, because I think I brought up the point that
a person can be an EU data subject for a limited period of time, and they can be back into the U.S. Enrolled in a U.S. soiled institution, and then they cease to become an EU data subject. So let's just say the record that comes into the clearinghouse is flagging their enrollment status while they are an EU data subject. So you can turn it on. And then the next record that comes into the clearinghouse or down the road, they're back on U.S. soil. They have ceased to become an EU data subject. And so you could turn it off. I was contemplating possibly something like that. Is that, Mark, too far afield from what you were thinking of?
No, it's actually, you said it better than I did, but I was trying to convey the same thing. In other words, I toggle the switch on or off with a send to the clearinghouse of the data.
Okay.
And I think now, by doing it that way, it impacts services and what the clearinghouse is doing in a more minor way than I think it does in a macro sort of way that would over-designate, if you know what I mean.
Does that mean all data that's been transferred previously is toggled on or off with that last send? I guess that gets back to the by record question, but
the way I look at it is, it's in a lot of ways similar to FERPA. It basically says the state of this individual student at this time is subject to this regulation. Now, what it relies on is an understanding, just like we do with FERPA, about how we will treat the information that you're keeping that is part of the individual student or that represents the individual student. So thus, we may not include them in certain kinds of processes. We may not share that information as part of data retrieval or inquiry for other. There just may be certain services that a GDPR data subject is not included. And we know that ahead of time. When we toggle that switch, we're saying, here's what we expect you to do with that data. So I'm seeing it as holistic. It's on or it's off.
Mark, let me take that apart for a second. So, you know, with FERPA, there's certain exceptions. If a student has applied a block, you know, we have exceptions to the use of or the block of the use of a record. Compliance reporting is an example. So I want to be clear just so that this group understands, you know, lawful basis drives these decisions about whether or not you're probably applying well, they could still be a new data subject regardless of whether you have a lawful basis for processing. So I think we can all agree that the institution could decide they have a lawful basis even though it's an EU data subject. I wonder how, if I'm complicating it too much, you're going to indicate that the clearinghouse can still process that record for purposes of enrollment reporting, for example, where I see a clear legal basis for processing.
Go on, Mary.
I'm complicating it, but I wonder on. Because they are an EU data subject, they would be subject to the GDPR, but we know there's variations of permissions or of the lawful basis to process data, and we know we've got some that are consent-driven and others that are driven by a lawful basis that exists apart from consent. So I just want to be sure we're clear about how is an institution communicating, or would they, to, for example, the clearinghouse?
So I remember talking about this a little bit and saying that there's a contract generally between the controller and the processor.
Right.
And that contract should specify how the data
to treat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Now, in the case of the clearinghouse, we do have contracts for all of our services, and we have different different contracts for different services. It's not so we could spelled out in there. So what I don't want to have us do in these in the exchange of data is to be specifying there how to use whether you can use
right.
the data. Really, really, I like, Mark, the simplicity of what you're suggesting, which is simply a flag saying this person is a such and such privacy subject. It could be a GDPR, it could be California, whatever.
Right.
And then we are then instructed through other means with the institution on what we can do with that data.
Right, because you know the GDPR requires that controllers direct the processing activities in writing.
Right.
So we would be meeting that requirement by doing it that way, and the agreement could provide that, for example, enrollment reporting and such other services that we furnish the institution could be expected from restricting the use of the record.
So,
I mean,
I have a question just to clarify. Is it possible that we need one more toggle so that yes or no, they're an EU data subject, and then once that's answered, is there a legal basis that would change that?
So do you mean, for example, well, I think maybe the only other flag would be whether there is consent.
Well,
but
yes. Maybe consent is better.
Consent, but it would be consent to, at this point, the person would have to consent to the controller. And then what we're talking about here is the controller
right.
sending data to a processor.
And
I suppose, go ahead.
Well, no, my thinking there, though, was, look, I think there's a little bit of detail work that we need to do, which basically I think is the contract specifying the suite of services that are curtailed if, in fact, we declare that this person is subject to the GDPR.
Yeah.
And, okay, so assuming that that exists, it almost doesn't matter, in my mind,
okay.
whether it's a permission or lawful basis point. The point is, I've given you a contract. Here's the suite of services. I toggle this on. They can't be part of that service or process
right.
or whatever we want
right.
to call it. And if I turn it off, it means you don't have to pay attention to them.
Mm-hmm.
The exchange of information becomes very clear. What may be hard for you, Doug, is if the suite of services becomes a smorgasbord for each of the institutions, and thus you have to enable algorithmically the interrogation of the configuration setup for the institution to determine how to process the individual student. Am I making sense,
yeah.
Doug?
No, you're right. I mean, we would have every provider of services would have to do that, and we're not an exception.
Right. And I think that could become a benefit of something that this committee does, which is to, for the GDPR, define that set of services and how that configuration setting per institution might be set, in addition to how we submit or not submit the toggle switch. By the way, putting together that suite of services or the processes may tell us whether or not Julia is actually correct, and we need to pay attention to whether it's permission or lawful basis.
Yeah, the only reason I could think you'd need a separate flag is that, number one, you'd want to say that, yes, this person is a GDPR subject. But then maybe another flag that says, but they've consented to having their data used for your service.
Yeah, and I guess now that's useful information, but the bottom line is you don't really care. You only want to know whether you got to process it or not.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
so
what
about, though, Mark? I may be bringing up something that will more likely not come to fruition very often, but if you have an EU regulator wanting to audit the controller's EU data subject data, you would have to demonstrate compliance with the GDPR, and you would probably be going to your processor
and asking your processor to produce records demonstrating compliance. Now, I don't know how that looks exactly because I don't know if regulators tend to come in and go, okay, let's take a couple of data subjects and let's follow their data, you know, their use of their data. I don't know that that would ever happen. I'm bringing up something that's more unlikely to happen, but if you were flagging every EU data subject's record, you would at least have the ability to ask the clearinghouse, you know, so how has that data been used? And we would have the flag on the record, because that would be a record in time. That would be like a constant EU data subject. And then we would be able to respond to that request. Just bringing that up as like a very remote but could be a possibility, because how do you as an institution controller intend to prove your compliance?
But if,
asking us to assist you with that, so I.
But we, I guess, Mary, if I, see, I've made a determination at Indiana that a specific student is GDPR data subject, and we're going to invoke the regulation. I send you a record, all the other record, but in addition, it has an attribute that says GDPR. Yes, we have an agreement that says this is the set of processes that can and cannot be operated on for this individual, and you know what that is because you know. Now maybe Doug, I'm missing something. If I'm transmitting and I'm toggling an attribute on or off, do you keep a history of the toggles value?
Well, I was thinking about
that. Or is it
that.
Only the most recent?
You know, again, if the toggle is related to the individual and not the record, then what I would do is I would keep one flag at the individual level, and each time a record comes in, I would just update it. So That's the thought.
But really, this is at the record level because, as I said, an individual may change in their status. They could be an EU data subject in
right.
one series of records,
right.
and then they cease to become it because they come back to the U.S., for example.
So then the question that I have was, do we still need to – there's a possibility that we could be offering a service where we can't use that record that was flagged GDPR last year, but we can use the record that – came in this month
right.
where they're not GDPR.
Right.
So in that case, you do have to attach it to the record.
Right.
In which case, the answer to your question, Mark, is yes, I would keep a history of it.
Okay. But Doug and Mary, what's your definition of a record?
So it would be, for example, the enrollment record or the degree record that we receive from institutions. Or it could be even a transcript, for that matter.
All three, I guess. I mean, so
yeah.
Do you keep a record? Do you call a record by term? By term and institution?
On the enrollment side, we definitely keep most institutions are reporting monthly. So every enrollment record that we receive for a person, or a learner, is in our system. So over the course of 4 years, you know, they'll have 12 or 16 records.
Okay, but that's one per term, not one
that's
per
right.
month.
Yeah, one per
so
term.
So you overlay the record. So a record for you, for Mark McConaughey enrolled in the spring of 2019, that's one record.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, we don't overlay.
You don't overlay. And so when I enroll in the fall of 2020, that's another record, and I give
that's
you another
right.
attribute, and I could be on or off, but you're keeping it. So if I had to go back and determine whether or not we were invoking GDPR rights for the student in the fall of, or in the spring of 2019, you'd be able to tell me that.
Right. And likewise, you know, if we, you know, if someone wanted to do a verification request that said, was Mark enrolled in the spring of 2000, whatever it was, 17, and you had a GDPR flag on there, we were instructed not to release that record, then we would not be able to release that record.
Right.
So
So if a student is looking to sign a consent form, that would be more on a case-by-case basis then, right?
Yeah, right.
So
right, because a lot of times students are seeking employment or a discount, and then they're consenting to having their enrollment verified. And so, to me, that would override any sort of restriction on, just like it does with FERPA, if
right.
a student, you know, provides consent.
So if a student is then wanting to basically consent, and then once that process is over, rescind that consent, is there, I guess we would have to try and account for that, right?
The consent is usually only good for one transaction.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so students applying for a job in which, you know, the enrollment or degree status, it needs to be verified, student agrees to that, consents to that, it's just use for that transaction.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate the clarification.
Yep.
So, Mark, you probably are right. That would be a way to address it, to make it most simple. We could, on an institution-by-institution basis, arrive at an agreement as to which services we can continue to process, and the GDPR flag would be indicated for an EU data subject, and we would just apply, assuming we build the functionality
mm-hmm.
to recognize that.
Yeah. Yeah, and our going in position is that until you tell us otherwise, we're going to use all of them.
Right.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
You know, the legal team would certainly be, my team would be happy to have a discussion. I mean, certainly we have a point of view of what services we think would be subject to lawful basis without having to require student consent on top of that. And obviously the institution will have its own opinion, and you drive that decision. So it's up to you to decide that. But, I mean, we
gotcha.
Have
a
discussion, yeah.
But I think that needs to be then negotiated as part of the contract. So
right.
we say, oh, here's the provisions for GDPR, and here's the suite of services offered. In our case, with Indiana University and the National Student Clearinghouse, here's the suite of services, and I tell you yes, yes, no, no, yes, yes.
Yes.
Going down that list.
Right.
That's right.
Correct.
That's right.
Yep.
And I'm pretty comfortable with that. I think that at least gets us started and enables
yeah.
us to comply, which is something we can't do at the moment. And it's simple to implement.
Agreed.
Right. And you want something.
Can I ask you, this is Jim Kelly. Can I ask you a question? I also have to get off the call, but I wanted to ask a question. Does this require that all of these controller-processor relationships have a contract? We have to look at this beyond just the National Student Clearinghouse situation.
Yes, Jim.
Yeah, we're doing this and treating the clearinghouse as just a generic vendor. Anytime you have a controller, an institution sending data to a processor like the clearinghouse, there has to be something.
There would need to be an agreement, and you as the controller would slow down the responsibilities to the processor, because the processor ceases to become a processor unless they're being directed by the controller, and the directions come in writing through an agreement.
Got it. Right. And that's specifically controller. The controller processor relationship captured in the contract. I understand.
Yep. All right. That's good. I think we actually
had a breakthrough.
So
hey, Doug.
Yeah.
Don't make it complicated, Mark. Given the nature of our committee, since we were trying to be extensible beyond the GDPR,
right?
Yes.
So how do we, we've talked about a toggle, and actually I think it may be this simple, but But we need, you know, we basically need a toggle for each of the privacy regulations that we need, for which we need to transmit the status of to a third party.
Correct.
So, you know, if I get California, I have my GDPR column, and that's a yes or no, and drives to the configuration settings that we've agreed to. And then the same thing true of the California law.
Yeah, I mean, Mark, California is not going to apply to every institution.
That's right.
Yeah.
And we're going to be able to tell you which ones it applies to.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're right, Mark. So the fun part comes down to defining potentially a set of data fields that is infinitely extensible for the future.
Right.
The future, global.
Right.
Privacy
now,
law.
We could come up with some, you know, crazy coding scheme that each time a new privacy regulation is introduced, we just exchange information on what code to use, but we don't have to expand the size of the field, because that's when you get into complications. It's so much harder to add a field to an extract coming from the SIS system than it is just to add a value to an existing field.
Yeah, and I hear you. I wonder, and that's where I need more technical guidance, is there a mechanism by which, and this will date, I'm sorry for all of you who are listening, especially if you're younger, but, you know, you think of repeating segments on old record types, where the beauty of that was you could define a certain set of attributes, and then underneath them, you could basically say, oh, and I have this, and I have this, and I have this, and I have this.
Yeah.
In that manner, it was infinitely doable, because you could have any number of repeating segments that you ever wanted, and thus you could continue to add the next privacy regulation, and the next privacy regulation, and the next privacy regulation. So in the world that we have now, as we transmit, I assume you mostly get flat files.
Yeah. So in the world of XML and EDI, setting up that recurrence is very easy.
Yeah.
In the world of a flat file, it stinks. It's impossible, to be honest with you.
Yeah. So would it behoove us to say, just create, you know, let's create the first one and then create 50 or another set of columns.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one approach to it. The other would be,
I mean, it's stupid simple.
Yeah.
Leading the meeting.
Jim Kelly.
Or you could have one flag instead of it being a yes. No, you can't do that. Sorry. So this is where the fun begins with the data scientists or the data analysts, because they can help figure that out. And I think from a pest perspective, doing it in XML and EDI is easier, because you can set up that repeating segment. And I think that's probably what the community is looking for pest to do, which is to do that. And then it becomes, you know, it becomes a little bit more difficult for folks like the Clearinghouse that are doing flat file for us to implement a repeating segment scheme into a flat file. And you're right, Mike, Mark, we could do something very simple like designate, 50 bits, right? And
right
now the very first one is for GDPR and the rest are to be determined.
Right. And then there's a crosswalk between that and the EDI and XML version.
Yes. So then when a new privacy regulation comes along for EDI and XML, you're not really changing the schema, so to speak. You're just updating the definition by saying,
right,
okay, now element number two becomes California's flag.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I think I overly complicated it, although I think we're closer to meeting what the committee's supposed to do.
Yeah. So what I would like to do is write this up and distribute it in the way that I've interpreted it to make sure that, so this is really, you know, around that we're going to do it on a record level, and that it could change, and that's fine, and that the details will be set forth between the contract between the processor and the controller. Because I think what we've really done here is we've kind of set business rules for what we need to communicate with one another. And then the next step will be more of a technical thing, which is, okay, let's define the fields for doing so.
Right, right.
Yep.
And Mary, are you okay with this?
Yeah, I am. I mean, certainly on the front end with regard to the contracting, the parties will need to have some meeting of the mind, and the controller is directing the processing. So I think that's the appropriate place for it. Otherwise, we are going to bog it down and make it difficult for the processor to execute without a lot of need for a technical solution that will probably overcomplicate this. So I think so. I mean, after the call, I'm going to think about it further. But right now, from our standpoint, I think this is the best approach. What do you think, Mark, from the school's perspective?
Yeah, I mean, from our perspective, given where we are at the moment, this is really where we'd like to head, I think. We want to keep it simple. We're talking about a single flag turning, they're either a GDPR subject or they're not.
Right.
And that can change over time. And so from our perspective, it's either on or off.
Yep.
And I think keeping it simple will guarantee you the most comprehensive buy-in.
That's true.
I think to complicate it any further, you know, you don't want to alienate those who you're trying to serve. So.
I agree, Julia.
But I think, too, it lends yourself to have less errors.
Yeah.
Which is a simple on-off, then it's pretty hard to mess that up. So.
And it also allows the institution to determine whether they believe the person is subject to GDPR.
Right.
Which should always be.
That's where it needs to be.
Yes.
I agree.
And that's what Rick Skeel's point last time, he was making that point pretty adamantly.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would like to hear what he has to say about what we've discussed. So
yeah,
that'll be great if you're writing it up, Doug.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah. Good.
Okay. So, in talking about, I think we've got something to go forward on our next meeting, and needing to sort of amp up the cadence on these calls, what do we want to think about for our next call? Michael, do you have anything calendar-wise that you want to throw out there?
Yep, let me come off mute. You know, we were looking at the third Wednesdays, but, you know, as Doug had mentioned, do we want to wait another time? You know, as far as meeting goes as well, Doug, you know, do we want to get down to the level of detail about, you know, proposing changes to the EDI and the XML? Do we pull in, you know, EDI and XML experts? How far does this group want to go down that?
I think what we need to do is kind of check off on how, you know, the information that I send around, everyone needs to say, yep, that makes sense. And then once that happens, we can say, all right, now let's bring in our data guys to come up with an XML and an EDI structure. I mean, gosh, it's very simple. It's just a matter of naming conventions and, you know, PESC has its own XML schema conventions and et cetera. I don't know that we're going to be able to do anything with the EDI version, Michael, other than just putting it into some sort of user-defined field. But that's another thing that we'll have to tackle. So I am, you know, just so everyone knows, I am very busy over the next couple of weeks. I've got a clearinghouse board meeting, and then I'm going on a mission trip.
So for me, it would be the week. Let me pull up my calendar here. Go ahead, Mary.
I was going to say, to have an opening on the 30th in the morning. That would be a Wednesday before you're offline.
Yep.
You're both gone.
Yeah, I am. I can do
2 weeks on the 30th.
I'm pretty open on the 30th.
I am too. This is Julia. I am too on that day.
Okay.
Crazy busy.
And it turns out I am not. I'm in a meeting in California.
I think you're in the same meeting as some of our folks.
What about in the morning, though, Mark? Your day starts later than our day.
He'll be up right early at 5 a.m. California time.
Well, I'm flying out Wednesday morning. I'm flying out Thursday. I'm flying out that Wednesday morning. The meeting starts at 10.
Oh, yeah, you're going to be out of commission.
Well, I know we decided on Wednesdays, but would the 29th or the 31st work?
Not for me. I'm out both days. That's when I'm traveling.
Me too. Okay.
But, you know, let me do this. Why don't you try the 30th? And what perhaps I can do is if I can at least provide comments, probably through Julia.
Right.
Okay.
And
that works.
And let her serve as my proxy for the 30th meeting.
That works great.
And why don't we, if you get your document written up, Doug, before then, if we share it electronically, too.
Absolutely.
We can have that discussion electronically so that maybe the 30th is just sort of a check-in.
Yeah.
As well.
I like that.
And just so everybody knows, I'll be at the meeting in California as well, but I'll talk with Julia and Doug about just entering the moderator code. It's very easy.
Okay.
That day is pretty good for me, so you guys decide if there's a time that would work for most people. I can do super early, and I can do later in the day, too. So.
How does 9 a.m. sound?
For me? That's fine.
Yeah. Okay.
I am here.
That's 6 a.m. for you, Michael, on the West Coast.
That's perfect. I'm up that time. Then I can do it.
Good. Awesome.
All right, awesome. I'll send out a reminder. I'll send out a reminder too and a calendar invite.
Okay.
Perfect.
Great.
Thank you.
Were there any other pieces of input or feedback from folks on the call?
I just have one question. What do we think the deliverable will be by ACRO? Is it really sort of a very small white paper saying, here's the recommendation for how this can carry forward, here's the business case, and then here's how it translates into a flat file, XML, and EDI?
Well, that's a good question. I think from an ACRO-PESC perspective, the information really would be about, hey, we've worked with the SIS vendors, and we've figured out how to, you know, what we need to store as far as the flag goes, and it's up to them to implement that in their system. But we also know that we need to carry that flag when we're exchanging education records. So the SIS vendors have agreed to add that to the XML extract and EDI extract and to any other extracts, and Clearinghouse just happens to be one of those.
Right.
So, the ACRO session certainly doesn't have to be a clearinghouse session. In fact, I wouldn't want it to be. I would want it to be a PESC ACRO. And, you know, the clearinghouse could actually provide details on how it's implementing its flat file implementation if it makes sense to do that. But I think there really is between the institutions, the SIS vendors who kind of have to agree to implement this, and then the vendors. And we can get as many vendors as we want to, that are going to be receiving education data. We could have ECE, we could have Paradigm, we could have the Clearinghouse. But it essentially isn't going to be limited to those vendors. It's just the fact that we're helping contribute to this solving this problem.
And the other question I have is this just simply a technical discussion, or is there going to be any sort of intro as to what we're trying to solve for? And that would raise the need for like a high-level presentation on GDPR, and I'm not talking like very detailed, but just what are we trying to solve for? I'm just wondering. Will institutions that are there right away put this all together, or do you think you need something to introduce the concept?
I think you need something to introduce it.
Yeah, that's what I think too.
Yeah, it's almost like you can't make it a technical conversation because you'll lose half the audience. But if you turn it into something around, here's how the community has come together to help you become compliant with GDPR.
Right.
That could be a lot more enticing.
Right.
Yeah, you got it, Doug.
Yep. And this is Michael,
that's
and
the
I would
time
add.
Second time you were right today, Doug.
I'm marking it down.
Sorry. And I would add that this is the first phase because Mary brought up a good point. Is you can't just start talking about. I mean, we could just start talking about processors and controllers, but it would be nice to have that context and the ground setting.
Yeah.
With that in mind, setting the context is going to be really important because some people might come right to the immediate. Is that it? Well,
No.
This is step one. There's now the other laws emerging in California, and this task force is going to continue because this is only step one. Now we're going to see if this is acceptable, and we'll continue to see what else might be needed.
Well, and a big piece of this is the institution deciding what the rules of processing are. So, what services are subject to any sort of restriction because of a GDPR or a flag. So, I think there needs to be just a little refresh in understanding what those are so that they put it together, that they have an opportunity on their end and then we're providing the technical fix for how to flag that for their vendors.
Yep.
Julia, you had a sold out session, didn't you, last year on the GDPR?
Yes.
A lot of people,
we just have one session or two, but yes, they were filled.
Yeah, and they wanted to be told what to do.
What we did too was we also had a roundtable, and so this might be good for a session, and then maybe to have a roundtable that's just people who want to talk about the nitty gritty a little bit more.
Yeah.
And maybe with some representatives of each of the vendors at the round table so that on a vendor-by-vendor basis they could get to the detail of those questions.
Yep.
So just doing some inside talk, Julia, you may need to raise this with Janie and see if we can use one of her saved sessions.
Yeah, I'm thinking, Janie and Melissa can tell me if this is doable. I will do that immediately after this call.
Very good.
All right.
Well, you need, what sort of help do you need on that session? Is that something that I should plan on attending? Or Mary?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it'd be great if we all did, and I'll try and start to put something on that together.
Okay.
And get a placeholder, at least, that we know where we're going to be.
Sounds good.
Okay.
All right.
Awesome.
Right.
So then just quickly, Doug, you're going to do that write-up on the approach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Julie, you're going to check on the ACRO stuff, and I'm going to take care of the administrative with the next meeting. And we have the recording. I'll post that and send out some emails.
Sounds great.
Sounds good.
Sounds good.
Julia and Michael, can we set up a time to talk about that PESC 101 that you had asked about?
Sure.
Okay, let's try to do that soon because I see you have a pretty quick deliverable.
Yep. Yep, I'll send out a doodle poll for the small group there.
Sounds good.
Great.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Bye.
Leaving the meeting.
Bye.
Nathan Ciccolo.
Leaving the meeting.